Howdy, howdy, and welcome to episode 110 of the Eyes Free Sports Podcast. My name is Greg Lindberg. Here on episode 110, we are chatting with a gentleman with a well-known nonprofit that provides athletic and recreational opportunities to people with disabilities, including those who are blind or have low vision. In addition to his work with this nonprofit, this gentleman is also a very accomplished and talented endurance athlete and paratriathlete who has competed in some super cool events throughout his athletic career. So let's go ahead and hit the track and get running with episode 110 of the Eyes Free Sports Podcast. All right, so joining me here on this episode of the podcast is Francesco Maggisano, and Francesco is the director of the New York City Metro Region for Achilles International and a very accomplished adaptive athlete, runner, paratriathlete, and cyclist. Francesco, welcome to Eyes Free Sports.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Awesome. Really, really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know before we started, like I mentioned, I did read your bio and kind of have somewhat of an idea of your background and some super cool events you've competed in and participated in. So really excited to dive in here.
Cool. Let's do it.
Awesome. Okay. So why don't we just start off things here with just your very early years, your childhood. Just talk to me about where you're from and your early years.
Yeah. So I grew up in New York City. I was diagnosed with retinoblastoma, which is how I became blind. That's, for those who don't know, it's eye cancer. And so I had partial sight, early years, you know, kind of running around. I didn't need a cane, but I also didn't have enough sight to, you know, read regular size print and all that. And then in high school, my sight went all the way down, to zero basically. And so that was kind of my entry into the, you know, the real world of blindness. Up until that point, never really competed in any sort of sports, like never was aware of adaptive sports, you know, adaptive opportunities. I'd never run a mile in my life, like never really did team sports. And it wasn't until about 6 years ago now that, you know, I found my way to Achilles. And that's when I experienced, you know, sports basically for the first time. Like I was a kid in middle school, right, who'd be writing essays about soccer instead of playing soccer with my friends. And so to be able to now, you know, flip the whole script and run and swim and bike, as you mentioned, super cool, super life-changing, as you can imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just to rewind a little bit, so kind of that transition, definitely curious about the transition from low vision to total blindness. Just talk to me about that journey. How old were you roughly, and just how was that that journey for you?
Yeah, so that happened about the end of my freshman year of high school, and it was over the course of about 3 weeks, right? Where in the beginning of those 3 weeks, my sight was, you know, good. It was normal for me. I was able to walk home on my own, right? See the traffic lights perfectly. Everything was cool. And then over the course of those 3 weeks, every single day, things got slightly blurrier and blurrier. And, you know, we find out later, right? It's because of hemorrhaging in the eye. But at the time, obviously, I had no clue what was going on. And so it was very much just, you know, first it was denial, right? You're like, ah, it'll go away. It's just the temporary thing. Like, don't think about it. It'll be fine. And then like a week and a half, 2 weeks in, and, you know, very much cloudy and blurry. You're kind of like, all right, it's not going away, right? Let's get this sorted out. And so scheduled a bunch of doctor visits and, you know, and all that. And basically it was hemorrhaging, and the only way to really fix it was go inside surgically, remove the blood through an operation called vitrectomy, which I ended up having like 10 of, and just kind of try to like flush it out, you know? And I mean, as you can imagine, like it was kind of a blessing that it was at the end of my freshman year, just cause then I had the whole summer break to just exist in, you know, the new reality. It wasn't right. Necessarily the middle of the school year. So you know, I wasn't trying to figure out how to do my homework in the moment. Obviously that was very much a reality come September in my sophomore year of high school.
Gotcha. Makes sense. And just thinking back to like the diagnoses you had, I mean, did you expect to be totally blind at some point, or was it kind of a shock at how quickly it happened? Or
yeah, it was very much a shock. So most of my treatment, you know, for the initial eye cancer was between the ages of 10 months old and, you know, 3-4 years old. And after that, theoretically, it was supposed to be pretty stable, right? Like,
sure,
unless something else were to develop, like things are stable, your retinas and all the stuff is basically what it is, right? It wasn't really deteriorating, it wasn't improving either. So the last thing on my mind was the possibility of losing sight.
Right. Wow. And just obviously at that age, you know, I'm sure friends getting their driver's license and kind of that transition into adulthood, mid to late teens. And how did you kind of handle all that?
Honestly, so yeah, a lot of people around me, right, they were displaying the normal activities of a person who's 15, 16, like you mentioned, right? Driving and
sure.
A lot of it, especially in Manhattan, less so driving, it was going out and the freedom that came with, you know, being able to, at a drop of a dime, like you just go out and go to see your friends, even something as simple as crossing streets. Right now, as we know now, you know, a person who's blind, perfectly capable of crossing a street, but at, you know, in the moment at the time, I thought, oh my God, life is over, right? Like there's nothing I can do. Right. So it was over the course of months where basically I was introduced to the blind community, right? I'd never met someone who was blind before then, just because I was sighted enough that I didn't really need services. And so it was very much just acquainting myself with what is out there. And that's honestly, that's when I do, you know, speaking and different things like that. The biggest thing and the first thing I tell people is it's raising awareness, right? You need to have the awareness that these things exist first before obviously tackling the actual learning of it. So
exactly. Yep. Well said. So then in terms of sports, so I understand it was a conversation you had with someone in line at the checkout at a grocery store as far as how you found out about Achilles initially, right?
It was a very lucky decision that I wanted to eat healthy because it was the vegetable section of the grocery store, and it's actually an entirely different section than, you know, where I normally go shopping. And right. So if I didn't decide, let me go buy some peppers, I would not have been in that section. And so this volunteer who was a guide for Achilles wouldn't have necessarily seen me. And basically, right, the story goes, he saw me, I was standing with my white cane, and he taps me on the shoulder and he goes, "Hey, you should join this running group. It's called Achilles." And, you know, in my mind, like, what are you trying to sell me, right? Like, a stranger walks up to you, especially in Manhattan, people don't necessarily talk to each other. So
right.
it's, you know, your guard automatically goes up, right? But he gives me the whole spiel about Achilles. I go home, I do some Googling, and I'm like, oh, this is actually a real organization with real meetups and real people. Like, this sounds pretty cool. And so, yeah, show up to the next workout and run my first ever run. I'd never, like I said, never run before in my life. I ran 4 miles that day. Wow. And then walked the entire week afterwards because it hurt so much, but I was hooked, man. I was absolutely hooked.
Yeah. So just the adrenaline, the endorphins, everything, just really the whole experience hooked you in.
And stubbornness. I mean, I was like, are you telling me that all of these other people here can run miles easily and I'm struggling to run 2 miles? Like, no, this is not acceptable. So honestly, I kind of stuck with it in the beginning, especially just out of like stubbornness and not wanting to be weak.
Interesting. Yeah. So let's dive into Achilles International and just, I know you do work for the organization and, you know, I've participated in many events as well. But just kind of give us a little intro to Achilles, the mission, kind of the goals of the organization, and then we'll start there.
Totally. Yep. So Achilles, it's the leading adaptive running nonprofit around the world. It operates on a chapter network. So the flagship is here in New York City, which is what I lead. It's also headquartered in New York City, but there are, you know, 70 plus chapters all around the world, all with, you know, weekly meetups. And the whole point of Achilles is to get people with all different disabilities, you know, involved in mainstream running and endurance events. And so, you know, I'm totally blind, as we discussed, but we have athletes with traumatic brain injuries, athletes who are amputees, athletes, you know, with various learning disabilities, like literally any disability, which is honestly why one of the reasons why I think it's so cool, right? It's not necessarily disability segregated, which unfortunately a lot of groups and organizations within the disability world is kind of disability segregated. So this is basically just a big melting pot of a whole bunch of people that want to come out and run. So, you know, that's the bread and butter of Achilles.
Sure, sure. That's awesome. And as far as like demographics, I assume it's all ages. You do have youth programs up to even elderly, would you say?
Totally, yeah. So we have a Team Achilles Kids program, which is anyone under 18 living with a disability. And, you know, we have, just for an example, we partner with a local hospital here in New York City to you know, invite people with Alzheimer's or early onset dementia out as athletes as well. And they're often in their 80s and 90s. So it's the entire range of age, you know, and everyone comes together and hangs out and gets along, because obviously everyone has different backgrounds, but everyone's there for running, you know, for activity, for walking, and for just community.
Right, right. Absolutely. As far as kind of the international scope, so I understand in addition to the US, there are international chapters, correct?
Totally, yep. So there are more international chapters than there are US-based chapters, to my understanding. And so I'm half Japanese and half Italian myself. And so last time I visited Japan, I actually ran with the Tokyo chapter of Achilles. And it was super cool because you actually, you know, different cultures, different parts of the world have different takes on things, right? And so in Central Park, where I, you know, run Achilles, we have a big group meet up in the beginning, you know, big kind of cheer, 100 people, everyone's yelling and everyone goes out on the run, right? People in Tokyo, the Achilles chapter there, they set up little tables with little like pickled vegetables and cold tea and stuff. And they run a kilometer and then they come congregate, have a little snack. They run another kilometer, they come back, congregate. You know, it's like this whole multi-hour morning ritual. And it was just, it's so cool. So it's, you know, and you see that anywhere, right? You go to the Norway chapter and they do Nordic skiing because you can't run in the winter there. So it's a very cool way to travel. You could really do a bunch of activities just by literally doing a world tour of all of the different locations.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. And just, you know, guests I've had on this podcast and research I've done, I'm sure adaptive sports, you know, around the world is kind of, you know, there are more opportunities in some areas versus others, and people with disabilities are treated, you know, differently in certain areas. And any light you want to shed on that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a large part of what we do at Achilles and what I try to do myself personally, as well as obviously the advocacy part, right? It's important to bring awareness and a lot of times support to a person or a group, you know, within the disability space. We do that, you know, within races. We do that even just locally within our communities, right, where each chapter is based. It kind of goes hand in hand, right? You can't honestly take a holistic approach to disability support and not really cover advocacy support, all those other aspects that go along with it. So, you know, it kind of goes with it. I love doing it because it makes a better world for everyone, not just people with disabilities, right? It's all encompassing. And it's just great to do, right? We're making it better one little step at a time.
Right. Absolutely. And we'll definitely get into the contact info and how folks can reach Achilles at the end of this podcast. But definitely wanted to dive into your athletic career and your achievements. Like I mentioned, you've done some super cool things. So wherever you'd like to start, and I know you mentioned that initial 4-mile run, and if you want to maybe chronologically take us through some other things you've done since then.
Totally, yeah. So I love the fact now, like looking back on it, I love the fact that I did not growing up doing sports, right? I never did organized sports, I never ran a mile growing up. And the reason why I love that is because now I can tell people, right? Because a very common excuse that I hear from, you know, my new friends and athletes is, well, I didn't grow up running, so now I can't be a marathoner, right? Like I hadn't run a mile since I joined, or until I joined Achilles. And so that was about May of 2017. Later on in July of 2017, I actually signed up for my first marathon. And the funny story with that is that I actually had no idea how many miles a marathon was until a month or two after I signed up for it, which sounds insane, but not necessarily insane. Because as we know, with total blind accessibility and all that, the website actually didn't display the mileage in a readable format. It was a photo instead of a, you know, a recognizable text. So I actually didn't know what the distance was until after I signed up for it. And when I heard it was 26.2 miles, I thought, everyone was insane. Like, you kidding me? Like, you're going to run 26 miles. Who does that? Right. What are you running away from necessarily? So I was very surprised, to say the least. But later that year, so that fall of 2017, I ran my first marathon, here in New York City. I ran, or competed in my first ever triathlon and just, you know, got the bug, right? I got enough of a taste of sports that I knew that I wanted to do more. And so, you know, went on to do more triathlons, more marathons. I raced representing USA in several sprint triathlons, which is really exciting, really fun, really honestly daunting a little bit, right? To wear the stars and stripes as a jersey. And that all kind of culminated with the event that we were talking about, Ultraman, back in February of 2023. Basically, it started a year before that, where my guide, Brian Hammond, who I've done a bunch of racing with, mostly cycling races and stuff, he called me because he was crewing for one of his friends down in Ultraman, you know, the year before that, so 2022. And he calls me from the Ultraman being like, hey, I just talked to the race director. You know, there's never been a person with a disability to compete in Ultraman Florida. You should do it. And I'm going to be your guide, is what he told me. And so, again, I didn't really look at the distances. I was just like, yeah, sure. This sounds epic, right? I love epic stuff. I love stories and adventure. Like, sure, we'll do it. Fast forward a few months. It's the summer of 2022. And I'm like, all right, I should probably start training for this thing, right? Like, let me look at how many miles it is. And it's, you know, day one, 6.2-mile swim. A 90-mile bike. Day two is a 172-mile bike, and day three is a double marathon, 52 miles. And the cutoff times are a lot more aggressive than Ironman, right? Ironman, you can kind of chill out and it's fine. With Ultraman, like, you make one mistake and you're potentially going to be cut off, right? Because of the cutoff time. So I was a little scared, to be fair, to be honest, a little fearful, because that's the first time I faced something like that. Started training, you know, had coaching calls with a few people that I trusted, Brian for sure, Travis Hawkins, who ended up being our crew chief. And we hit it and we finished it each day under the cutoff. We made it, you know, first blind person to ever finish Ultraman Florida. And it is still the most fun I've ever had during a race.
Wow, that's incredible. I just am trying to wrap my head around that distance and the time frame, you know, involved in that type of event.
Oh, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. Don't sign up for it. But I will say it is so much fun. It's actually, so they have Ultraman Worlds, which is it's in Hawaii, and, you know, same distances except in Hawaii. And that sounds like so much fun. I haven't brought it up to my guides yet, so if they listen to this, this is the first time they're hearing about it. But I'm thinking about playing with it maybe in the next couple of years. So we're going to see. It's going to take a lot of training. I learned a lot from racing Ultraman Florida, like the amount of volume that you need to carry into something like that. You know, I carried more volume than I've ever carried into a race. And it should have been like double that, you know, so it's a long-term goal. We'll see.
Sure. Sure. And just thinking back to that initial 4-mile run you mentioned earlier, and then this, you know, incredibly lengthy event. So how did you feel? How did your body feel after this event?
So after Ultraman Florida, I felt tired for sure, as you'd imagine, but honestly, physically I was much better than I thought I would be. Like, it was honestly fine. It was mentally, like, a week after the race, right? I remember very clearly I was home and my roommate, Simon, he asked me basically, like, what do you want for dinner? And I was thinking about what I wanted for dinner. And 5 seconds into that thought, I literally gave up. I was like, no, I can't think about what, just order whatever you want. Like, just get me something. And I got tired thinking about what I wanted to eat for dinner. That's insane. You know, I've never experienced that type of like mental fatigue a week after this thing. It took almost a month for me to not just get mentally tired doing random menial things. That was the big surprising part.
Right. Right. Wow. That's amazing. So I definitely want to ask you about guides and guys that you've had, you know, in your athletic career. And what would you say are kind of the keys to that successful relationship and partnership with a guide?
I think above all, the relationship between a blind athlete and their guide is personality, right? Like I, especially me, I need to feel comfortable with a guide that I'm going to do a mentally challenging race with. You know, I will take someone that I am comfortable with over someone of greater fitness every single time, you know, because my ability to be comfortable with them has such a big impact on my execution of a race, their execution of the race, because they're literally tied to me, you know? So, and especially the higher you go in terms of competitive racing, the more you're really limited on guide selection, right? Like you race on that level or even, you know, international level, whatever it is, there's only a handful of guides who are able to perform at that level and who are willing to guide someone who's blind, right? A lot of people aren't willing to guide someone who's blind. And so that choice narrows down. And so your job becomes honestly a lot harder to try to find someone who's willing to dedicate all the time and, you know, all the different things. Now, part of my job with Achilles, which is one thing I really love about it, is I get to train all of the new running guides here in Manhattan. And so I literally run with, you know, 10 to 20 brand new guides who've never guided before every single week. And so because of that, I'm able to get my runs in. I get my variety on people, all different personalities. It's really fun for me, you know? So on that respect, it's really cool. Finding cycling guides and swimming guides for training a little harder than finding running guides. And then as we discussed, the racing guide aspect's probably the hardest.
Sure. Sure. Interesting. And I do wonder, just in your role with Achilles, and you mentioned training other guides, and what kind of information do you convey? What do you kind of encourage those guides to really focus on?
Yeah, so we've, especially in this past year or two, have created this, you know, pretty robust guide training certification. And so anyone who joins Achilles now, and we're rolling it out to the different chapters, goes through this guide training, right? It's a mixture of video, questions, and an in-person hands-on training. I'd say the biggest things is getting used to leading, right? Not most runners are not used to leading necessarily. And so, for example, I'm totally blind, right? I have zero vision. And so when I start veering, let's say slightly to the right, as we're running, the guide should not follow me right. They should continue going straight and even bump up against me to kind of push me back left. That it sounds really obvious, but most people don't do that. Most people will follow you right if you kind of lead right. And so just training those, you know, habitual reactions out of the new guide. Another thing is being vocal, right? Especially in a park like Central Park in Manhattan, it's really crowded sometimes. And so getting used to verbalizing, right? You know, blind runner coming through, Achilles athlete coming through, right? Just getting used to calling that out. For some people, totally natural. For others, totally a new concept. And yeah, so, you know, for me and my job, my whole thing is just getting people comfortable doing all the cues, you know, calling out obstacles, directions, all those things, and trained up so that when I pair them with one of my other athletes, they're solid, right? They're good to go. I don't have to worry about them and their ability to guide.
Right. Gotcha. I'm sure you deal with, like you said, all different personalities. And I definitely sense that you have the personality to be able to handle, you know, a variety of people and backgrounds and to kind of, you know, teach and instruct those folks on.
It helps to be loud and rambunctious.
Exactly. Yep. So speaking of guiding, so tethers are definitely a big part of guiding, especially when it comes to running. And I know there are hand tethers, there are waist tethers. What's your preference when it comes to tethers?
Yeah. So I actually, one of our athletes, founded this company, it's called Big Blind Ambition and it's a tether company basically. And it's actually the first one that, you know, is founded by someone who's blind and kind of takes the feedback of someone who's blind. So I train all of the new guides at Achilles on a hand tether, just because, right, more blind runners will use a hand tether versus a waist belt tether. It's a little more applicable to beginners, all that. So everybody is trained on a hand tether. We have a small number of blind athletes who prefer waist belt tethers. I'm one of them. I like waist belt tethers unless I'm racing a race that actually restricts waist belt tethers. For example, the Boston Marathon, you're not allowed to use a waist belt tether.
Interesting.
But so, yeah, primarily hand tether. Secondarily, a little more like advanced training is a waist belt tether. And then a swim tether is, you know, there's a few different forms of swim tethers. It basically consists of either something around the waist or around one leg, connecting you with your guide around their waist or their leg, you know, with a rope. So yeah, swimming is, guiding swimming is a little involved because obviously you don't have the ability to give verbal cues, right? Because I don't know about other swimmers, but when I'm swimming, I can't hear anything, right? My ears are in the water. All I hear is like waves splashing. There's no verbal comprehension.
Yep.
So it's all honestly tactile, like me feeling either my guide or their presence in the water, like the little pressures and stuff that the water makes around them. And when it's time to do big turns or big adjustments, like, you know, 90 degree right around the buoy or a 180, that's when we incorporate taps. So either, you know, tapping an athlete on the shoulder or on the head just to give that tactile feedback. And that's usually how that communication goes.
Gotcha. Makes sense. As far as the triathlon events go, the three events, what would you say is the most challenging?
The most challenging event in a triathlon for me is the swim, just because I didn't grow up swimming, right? I didn't grow up doing any of the sports. And so I think it's harder to pick up the form and technique intensive swim stroke. For most of my blind athletes, I would say that holds true. Swimming tends to be the hardest, unless, like, I have two or three athletes that grew up swimming either competitively or just, you know, recreationally. They love swimming. Like, that's their thing. And it tends to be running that is their challenge. I think everyone kind of equally experiences the tandem bike for a blind athlete, right? We ride tandems. I think people underestimate the importance of bike handling skills for the person sitting behind, not just the pilot, right? You can have a solid, you know, crit racing, cycling, pro pilot, whatever. But if the blind athlete in the back doesn't necessarily know how to, you know, put their weight on the bike, lean into turns, corner, do all those things, if they don't really know how to do that, it doesn't matter how good the person in the front is, that bike will not handle well. And so when we do our, you know, triathlon training camps, there is a big emphasis when we do the bike sections on bike handling for the blind athlete, right? For a lot of blind athletes, they've never been on a bike before. And for them, it's honestly easier to coach because they don't have bad habits. It's, you know, the person who grew up biking, but then lost her sight and hasn't, you know, biked for 10 years or whatever, and now tries to get on the tandem, that tends to be a little more complicated to coach because now they have all these habits and stuff.
Right. That is interesting because you would think with the bike, you know, you're pretty much directly connected to the captain in front and maybe would be the easiest one of the three, but certainly does have its challenges as well.
I remember for me personally, biking, tandem biking, totally blind was the hardest to pick up because I was so used to turning the handlebars slightly when I felt the bike lean, right? Like as a sighted person or as, you know, someone riding the front of the bike, when the bike starts to lean, you turn the bars, right? That's how you kind of adjust and stop yourself from crashing. But if you're in the back and you try to turn the bars in the same way, like you're twisting your pilot's seat. And so it's not a good, you know, habit to fall into. So I remember, you know, the first guy that I rode tandem with back in 2017, his name was Roy, super solid, super calm dude. Like his calmness is literally the only thing that stopped us from crashing. Like there were so many times where he would take, you know, slight little turns going around just gently right in Central Park. And I would freak out because I, you know, you're convinced you're going to crash. Cause if you were on a single bike, you would crash.
Right.
And so it was very entertaining. I normally are not in that type of scary situation.
Yo. So then as far as your athletic goals, I know you did mention Ultraman in Hawaii as a possibility. Anything else kind of on your list?
Yeah, I've realized, not that I'm old, I'm going to sound old when I say this, I'm only 29, but I've realized as I've done more racing, I really enjoy doing things that I think of as really epic and adventurous, right? Like doing really cool events, just that's what excites me, you know? So scratching off some ultras. I did obviously Ultraman, doing Hawaii Ultraman would be cool. Doing some 100 milers, maybe like Badwater, just doing some things that help me explore my mind and, you know, the point in my mind where it wants to quit and trying to play with that line and, you know, flirt a little past that line. That's really what excites me. So I'd say that. And then the second part is doing races with people that I really enjoy racing with. And so, you know, there's so many people that are just so much fun to share a race course with. And so just to get to do that more often, like this coming up, this April 2024 in Boston, I'm running with a guy that I met last year. Now I'm fortunate to call him a friend, Neve. And I met him just through a PR thing last year, right? And we did a bunch of runs together last year. We ran the marathon together. Got, you know, one of the our good PR opportunities in the New York Times because of that. And just being able to expand relationships with people that I normally would never get to meet. Like that's really excites me.
Right. Absolutely. Very cool. As far as some other sports for the blind, whether it's goalball, beat baseball, maybe some of the team sports, I've had a chance to try any of those as well.
I've tried a bunch of sports. I'd say one that really excites me, and that I only started doing a few years ago. It's not, I wouldn't call it a team sport, but it's actually, so it's downhill skiing. And I went out there the year after, you know, the shutdowns were going on. And I skied in Telluride in Colorado, and it's with a program called Telluride Adaptive Sports Program, TASP. And since then I've been out there every winter just for like a week and a half skiing. And it's so cool because it's so different from what I'm used to, right? Like I'm used to being tethered with my guide. And when you're a blind skier, there's no tether. Like I'm communicating with my guide through a radio headset and they're skiing behind me, talking to me, being, you know, slide right, slide left, bump, you know, brace for the tree, like, you know, all these verbal cues. And to not have a rope connect me, it was very, very different when I first started doing it. And now it's just a great way to break apart the, you know, grind, train for triathlon kind of mentality.
Well, yeah, I can imagine just kind of being in snow, you know, skiing on snow, very different environment, I'm sure, compared to some of the races you've done.
Yeah, I luckily have not raced triathlon or marathons, anything in snow. It does sound pretty cool. Like I would do a Arctic marathon or something like that. Like, you know, don't count it out, right? I'll probably do one at some point in my life. But for now, I much prefer sliding down comfortably with a hot chocolate in my hand and just, you know, cruising around the slopes that way.
Gotcha. I'm with you on that one. I'm also curious about your advice and just your perspective on the benefits of participating in sports and recreation, you know, perhaps for the disability community at large, but specifically blind and visually impaired individuals. And let's say someone listening to this has never really participated in much or done a whole lot. What kind of advice would you have for that individual?
For someone who's blind, who's never done sports, you have to try it, right? Like it's absolutely scary. It is terrifying at times. That is absolutely true. That doesn't mean you don't try it, right? I think the first issue that we're trying to solve here is just awareness, right? I grew up my whole life, you know, my single digits and teens, not being aware that adaptive sports was a thing, right? We are trying to solve that so that more people at an earlier age knows that it exists. And not only does it exist, it is accessible, right, to anybody. It's life-changing. I mean, I cannot imagine what my life would be if it wasn't for sports, right? It obviously health and fitness, right? The accessibility of just, let's say, running, right? No equipment. You just go outside. There's no memberships or anything that's involved. It's accessible to everyone. And it's your health. It's your fitness, right? Longevity. It's your quality of life. It's all of those things. And that translates over to your professional life, your career, your, you know, family, your relationships. Like it literally affects everything in your existence. And so I think the importance of bringing access and awareness to someone with a disability and obviously someone who's blind like me, it is the most important thing that we can do and is what we are working every day to do.
Sure. Very well said. and I always say on this podcast, you know, there's something for everyone out there, regardless of age, regardless of physical ability, you know, whether it's just taking a walk down the block or playing audio darts, for example, up to, you know, more competitive sports like goalball, be baseball, and then some of the endurance stuff, you know, up to, say, an Ultraman race. There's something for everyone. Would you agree?
Absolutely. There is definitely something for everyone. And a common reason that people tell me of why they don't start is because they feel like they're already so far behind, right? It's like, I'm already 40 years old and I'm, you know, overweight and I've never walked and all these reasons, right? And what I say to them is, as long as you're doing something a little more today than you did yesterday, that's all it counts, right? Like, literally, if your norm is walking a quarter mile around the block to get a loaf of bread and coming back, you walk a quarter mile plus a few extra steps, right? Like, that's literally all it takes. And over time it compounds, and it's never too late. There are people who join us when they're 60s, 70s, 80s, and they've not ever done exercise, and they're starting, and you still see a difference even that later on in age.
Right. That's awesome. Okay, so to wrap up here, I wanted to give you a chance to mention the contact info for Achilles International if anyone listening is interested in getting involved or learning more about Achilles.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to remember one URL or one place, it's just AchillesInternational.org. So Achilles, like the heel, and then international.org. From there, you can find, you know, where your nearest chapter is. If there's not a chapter near you, there are virtual offerings that you can join, right? Not as good as in person, but definitely better than nothing. And that's the gateway, right? Once you join the community virtually, there are pathways for you to join in person. AchillesInternational.org, that's the best place. I'm based here in New York City. If you come out to Central Park, you'll probably meet me at a workout. So come say what's up.
Nice. And I'll definitely include a link to that in the show notes for everyone to have as well. Okay, well, again, we've been chatting with Francesco Maggisano here on this episode of Eyes Free Sports, and Francesco, really appreciate the time. You've given some awesome insight, perspective, and I think have pumped up some individuals as well, just with your words of encouragement. So thank you so much for joining us here on the podcast.
You know, man, thanks for having me. Thank you for what you do with your podcast and everything, right? Like, raising awareness, this is what it's doing, right? So thank you for what you do. Thanks for inviting me, and just happy to be here.
Awesome. Really appreciate that, Francesco. Alrighty, take it easy. To hear more episodes of the Eyes Free Sports podcast and to subscribe, search for Eyes Free Sports on your favorite podcast platform or visit eyesfreesports.com. Be sure to follow the Eyes Free Sports podcast at facebook.com/eyesfreesports and on Twitter @eyesfreesports.